All right. So there's one topic that we don't often talk about in church. And maybe it's because we're afraid to. Maybe it's because churches have done a really bad job talking about this topic. Maybe it's because every time we're like flipping the channels late at night and we come across the creepy TV preachers, it seems to be the one topic that that's all they talk about. But James decides to address this topic head on as he's wrapping up his letter. And since we're in a series on James, we're going to address it head on as well tonight. And that's the topic of money. Money, that's right. Money and wealth and riches and finances. Now, this topic is very interesting because in the passage we're going to read, it's in James 5. We're not going to read it right this second, so don't jump ahead too quickly. But in the passage and the verses we're going to read, James specifically says, I want to address rich people. Now, and then he goes on and he has some things to say specifically to rich people. Now, there's all kinds of biblical scholars that write all kinds of books about the book of James and what he means and these commentaries, and they tell us everything you need to know about James. And all of the smart, intelligent biblical scholars actually think, or most of them, not all of them, but most of them think that this passage is specifically about not just rich people, but non-Christians. That even though James wrote this letter mostly to Christians, and throughout most of the letter he's been giving instruction to Christians about how they should live and what faith should look like in the real world, that in this one specific passage, and you'll see why in a second, James steps aside for a second, and he decides to address specifically rich people who are not Christians, who are outside of the church and outside of the community of faith, and he has some things to say to them. So if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, but you just happen to be here, some people think this was written specifically for you. But I'm not so convinced. Because, again, James has been writing to Christians throughout the whole letter. And in fact, there's one time in the letter where he addresses some Christians who are business people, who travel around and they, you know, trade and they're merchants and they're probably pretty good at it and they probably make a fair amount of money at it. And I'm just not convinced that when James has something to say about money or wealth or rich people, that that doesn't apply to people, whoever they are, whether they're Christians or not Christians. So if you're a Christian tonight or you're not a Christian, this could actually apply to you. But again, it comes back to that question of who are the rich people that James is writing to? I mean, how do you define rich? What is a rich person? If you could define rich for a second, who are the rich people? Well, let me give you a few statistics. And we're going to put these on the screen. And these are the mean American household income quintiles, which is a lot of complex terminology. But let me just explain what that means to you. This is the latest census that they took. Mean doesn't mean like nasty or unkind here. What they've done is they've taken all the households in America and they've broken them down into five equal groups based on their yearly income. And here are the groups. In the lowest 20% of households in America make less than $20,500 per year. And I think we would all probably say a good adjective to describe that group is poor, right? I mean, you're probably poor if you make less than if your household makes less than $20,500 a year. Second 20% of households make at a minimum $20,500 a year up to the next limit. And we probably say those people in that group are making it. They might be struggling, they might be having a hard time, but they're probably making it. Middle 20% household makes $38,600 plus a year up to the next limit. And we might say they're probably well off. Like they're probably doing okay, they're making ends meet, they've got a little bit extra left over, they're probably well off. Fourth 20% of households start at $61,800 a year, which we might actually say is rich, right? I mean, if you're in that group, at a bare minimum, you make more than 60% of the people in this country. You make more than a majority. And if you're at the higher end of that group, you make more than the large majority of the people in this country. And the highest 20% of people in America households make $100,000 or more, and we might call them filthy rich. Which, if we use these, you know, statistics, and we looked at ourselves and we looked at our households tonight, we might say that the top two groups, about $62,000 or more, if you make about $62,000 or more in your household per year, then we might be able to call you rich. And that's just by American standards. And that's probably some people in this room. It might be a lot of people in this room. But Americans are just 5% of the people in the world. And if you were to take what we make and compare it to everyone else in the world, let's look at those statistics. If you're in that second group, it's hard to categorize the first group since they don't have a lower limit, but if you're in that second group of people, the second 20% of households, compared to the world, you are in the top 11% of people in the world. If you're in the next group, the middle 20%, you are in the top 3.6% of people in the world in what you make. If you're in the fourth 20%, you're in the top 0.9% of people. And if you're in the last group, you're in the top 0.7% of people in the world. Which means if you're in one of those top two groups, if your household makes about $62,000 or more a year, then 99% of the people in the world make less than you. And in fact, even if you're in the second group, if you make $20,500 or more a year, then 89% of the rest of the people in the world make less than you. Probably all of us in this room, maybe not every single person, but maybe every single person in this room fits in one of those groups. And yet, none of us wants to say that we're rich, right? I mean, nobody likes that label. Because, first of all, you can always think of somebody else that makes more money than you. I mean, you can always think of somebody who has a better job, has more income, drives a nicer car, has a bigger house, has cooler stuff, all that. So it's always easier to like look at other people who make more than you and think, well, I'm not rich because look at all these other people and what they have. And secondly, you know, we hate to use that term because there's something negative about the word rich. Like we'd rather say someone's wealthy, they're well off, they're really blessed, they're doing well, but like, the word rich just has like a negative connotation. It kind of has baggage. There's a shame associated with it. And so we never want to call ourselves that. And yet, according to everybody else in the world, probably every single one of us in this room would be called rich tonight. So in light of that, James says to all the rich people, whoever we are, and if we want to admit it, this is what he says. In James chapter 5, starting in verse 1. Now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Nice little encouraging way to address the rich people that he's writing to. I told you a couple weeks ago that sometimes James shifts into like Old Testament prophet mode. This is one of those passages where he shifts into Old Testament prophet mode and he starts kind of getting hardcore. And I don't know if it's because he's at the end of the letter and like he's tired of writing or he's just like kind of gone easy on him and now he's like ready to like let him have it or what. But James says, look, listen, you rich people, you could better start weeping and wailing and howling and crying out because there is misery coming on you. Which seems odd because when you think about rich people, whether it's them, somebody else, or it's us, whether we include ourselves in that group, when you think of someone who's wealthy or rich, you think about somebody who has a pretty secure future, right? I mean, the point is they have money, they've taken care of themselves, they've taken care of their future, everything is set, nothing is going to take them by surprise. Like, they shouldn't have to worry about the future. And yet, James says, look, you've overlooked something. Like, if you're rich, you have overlooked something, and a day is coming where the thing that is like such a source of pride to you now, it's going to be a source of shame. And a thing that is such a source of comfort right now, because you've got 401ks, you've got IRAs, you've got savings, you've got plenty of stuff, you've got investments, like you're protecting your future and you're all ready to go. That thing that you think makes you so secure now, actually, a day is coming where, like, that's going to be a misery to you. He goes on. Look at what he says in verse 2. He says, let me tell you why. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. In other words, let me tell you why it's going to be a source of misery, because you have so much money and you have so much wealth and you have so much stuff that it's like it's just laying around, and it's like you've put your money in these bags and you put it in corners and it's just collecting dust and it's just rotting away. And we read that, and it's like, I don't know that I can relate to that. I don't have so much money sitting around that I'm putting it in bags and it's just collecting dust. And yet, I think you would look at all of us and say, yeah, but you've got, look, think about it for a second. You're rich. Like, compared to everyone else in the world, you're rich. And you've got more than you need, and you spend it on yourself, and you've got stuff all around that you don't even use. And what you don't spend directly on yourself, you save so that you can spend on yourself in the future. And he goes on, he says, moths have eaten your clothes. Like, you've got a closet full of clothes that you don't even wear, and now moths are eating them. And I read that, and it's like, ooh, yeah, guilty. I mean, how many of us could James come into your house right now and look in your closet and pull out clothes or shoes that you never wear? Anybody? Yeah? Come on, be honest. You're in church. And the truth is, we've all got so much stuff that we never even use. And so you know what we do now? We have walk-in closets. Like, we build huge his and hers walk-in closets. They're like bigger than our bedrooms. There are stores. There's one like a mile from here, a whole store that is dedicated to helping you organize your closet and all the clothes that you can put in your closet. And then we line our closets with cedar. Do you know why? So that moths don't eat our clothes. And we put our dresses and our suits and bags to protect them. And the companies that make the clothes, they put like certain chemicals in them now so that they'll never rot away. And it's like James is looking into our lives and he's saying, look, you may not think so, because you can always find someone who has more than you, but let's be honest, if we're all honest with ourselves tonight, you've got more than you ever need. I could look in your garage and you got so much stuff in there that you never use. I could look in your closet and you've got clothes that you never use. I could look in all your accounts and you've probably got money that you're not even using. And it's just rotting away. He goes on. He says in verse 3, your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Now, in that day, money wasn't paper money. They didn't have paper money like we have today. Money or wealth was found in precious metals, in gold or silver, whether it was jewelry or coins that you have. And so he says, your wealth that you've got tied up in gold and silver, you know what it's doing? It's corroding, or it's rusting. That's what the word means. Which is interesting, because if you know anything about gold and silver can't actually rust. And it's not that James is ignorant. It's not like he doesn't know what he's talking about and he's just not sure. He thinks gold and silver can rust and he writes that and he just doesn't know anything about metals. I think what James is saying is, look, the one thing that you've put stock in, the one thing that you put your confidence in, the one thing that you think is so secure that's going to make your life secure, that you think is going to take care of your future and make sure that, you know, you'll never have a rainy day and everything's going to be all right, the one thing that you think is unrustable and uncorrodable, it's actually corroding away. And then he says, their corrosion will testify against you. And it's almost like, now, one thing really interesting here is this word corrosion. He switches and he uses a different Greek word. So this was actually originally written in Greek, so what we're reading is an English translation. But that second line up there, when he says their corrosion, he uses a different word, and it means corrosion, so it's translated correctly, but it can also mean poison. Or it can mean venom, like from a snake. Or it can mean acid, like, and they didn't have batteries back then, but like a battery leaks acid. And so it's almost like he's saying, look, this wealth and this stuff that you've accumulated for yourself and that you're hoarding and keeping and making sure you're taken care of and your future's taken care of, that stuff and that perspective, one day you're actually, and this is where he goes prophet on us again. He says, one day it's like you're going to be standing before God and you're going to have to give an account. And these things are actually going to be like witnesses against you. That these things are going to testify against you that you have only thought about yourself your entire life. And so all that thinking about yourself and your vacations and your wants and your needs and your future and your family, and I've worked so hard and I've done all this to take care of everything that I need to take care of, all of that's going to one day testify against you, and it's going to eat your flesh like fire. Now you know why these guys got together and said, it's got to be about 9 Christians. Like, James couldn't be talking about us. Like, he's probably talking about non-Christians, but I'm not so sure. Because I read this and it's like, yeah. And he says, look, a day is coming where the thing that you have put such a source of security and comfort in, it's not going to be a source of security and comfort then. He keeps going. Verse 4. He says, look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. In other words, not only do you have more than you'll ever need, but other people are actually suffering at your expense. That there are other people that you are, whether you know it or not, you are taking advantage of them, and they're suffering so that you can have your comforts and your luxuries and your lifestyle, and they're suffering at your expense. And in James's day, you know what was going on? There were these wealthy landowners. And so they would hire out day laborers because they could, and they would hire out day laborers, and the day laborers would come and they would work on their land for a day, and then at the end of the day, they wouldn't pay them any money. Why? Because they could. Because they didn't care. Because that's just the way it worked back then. Because that's just the way their economy worked. Because they were just focused on themselves. Not really anyone else. And James is saying, look, you maybe don't know what you're doing, and maybe you don't even care, but there's people that are suffering at your expense. And guess what? God hears their cries. Now, I read that verse, and it's like, okay, felt convicted about the others. Not sure this one applies to me. Like, I mean, there's nobody that, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not hiring people that I'm not paying. Like, that's just wrong, you know? That's unfair. That's not just. And probably we're all good people, and we would all look at that and say, that is not right. Like, that's just, I would never do that. But if we could be honest for a second, these clothes that I'm wearing, they probably weren't made in this country. They were probably made by people who live in another country where there are no laws that protect the rights of workers. That there were people that probably are suffering and living in poverty to make these clothes, and they're basically getting nothing for it. That the coffee I drink, that I love to drink, if it's not fair trade coffee, then it was probably picked, and I've seen where it's picked because we see it in Guatemala. It was probably picked by women and children who live in poverty and get paid, get this, the statistic equivalent of zero compared to what I paid for the cup of coffee. To which James might look at me in my life and say this. He would maybe say, look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who provided a cup of coffee for you are crying out against you. The cries of the coffee harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. That's not like some Marxist, leftist, radical thing. Like, this is the Bible. This is James, the brother of Jesus, talking. And he's not done. One more thing. This is what he closes the passage with. Verse 5. He says, you have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter, and you have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. In other words, your life of luxury, all your comforts, all the things that seem normal to you, but to the other 99 or 89% of people in the world, they're not normal. Like, they're luxuries, they're comforts. They're things that only rich and wealthy people have. To be able to have those things and to maintain that kind of lifestyle, he says, it destroys other people's lives. And he uses this like really strong language. You've murdered innocent people. And he's actually used this language in other passages. And we know he's probably more figurative. He doesn't mean like you've literally killed people. But that to maintain the kind of lifestyle you've got, to kind of keep having the wealth you have, and to just think about yourself and no one else, do you realize that actually can destroy other people's lives that you're not even thinking about? And then he uses this great image, and it's almost like it's the one image that wraps up or summarizes the whole passage. He says, you know, you've lived in earth in luxury and in self-indulgence, and you fatten yourselves up for the day of slaughter. You see, in those days, the Israelites would, before they have a big party, they would fatten up a calf, meaning they would feed a calf a whole bunch of food, and they would fatten it up so that when they slaughtered the calf, there would be tons of meat and a great festival and a great party. That's just the way it worked. And it's the same way today. Anybody know much about the beef industry? Like, you see how they treat cows, and you see all the corn they feed them, and they fatten them up with chemicals and corn and everything else so that they can, so we can all have nice, juicy hamburgers, you know? It's just the way it works. And so he says, look, you haven't fattened up a calf. You haven't fattened up a cow. You have fattened up yourself. And just like the calf or the cow is unaware of what's coming to them, you are unaware of what's coming to you. Because you've only focused on yourself, and because you have so much more than you need, and you've never stopped to ask the question, why is it that I have so much more than I need? Why is it that I'm wealthy? Why is it that I'm rich? Why is it that God has blessed me with so much, that God has given me so much? You've never stopped to ask that question, so you just assume it's for you. And so you just focus on you and what you want and your future. And James says, a day is coming where it's going to be a day of misery for you. Maybe these biblical scholars read this passage and they were like so convicted that they just all got together and said, let's just decide it's about non-Christians. Like, let's just decide it's not about us so we don't have to apply it to our lives. But I read it and it's like, I'm convicted. It seems like James is talking about me. And you see, I don't think the main problem of rich people, the kind of rich people he's talking about, the kind of rich people we are, I don't think the main problem is that they made too much money. And I don't think the main problem is that they had too much money or too much wealth or too many possessions at their disposal. I think the main problem is they and we never stop to ask the question, why do we have so much? Why is it that God has blessed us with so much? Why has He given us so much? Why do we have more than we need? And because we never stop and ask that question, we just assume, well, it must be for me. And so we increase our lifestyle and we buy the stuff we want and we fill our garages with tools and toys that we're never going to use and our closets with clothes that we're never going to wear. And we, you know, we just spend everything on ourselves. And when we do save, we save for ourselves, right? We save for our future so that we can use it in the future. You see, we never stop to think that maybe the reason we have more than we need is not for me. The other day, I sold something on Craigslist. You got some Craigslist people here? Yeah, it's awesome. And I sold something on Craigslist, and a guy came by, and he bought it, and he gave me the money. And so I walked in. He left, and I walked in. It was $40. I sold it for $40. And I walked in. I showed Janice. I was like, check it out, $40. And we were both like, what are we going to do? Like, let's go out to dinner. What are we going to treat ourselves to? And that was like our immediate thought. That whenever I get something, like whenever some blessing, some wealth, some money, anything comes my way, my immediate response is, well, it must be for me. Like, let's celebrate. It must be so that I can spend it on me. Which means probably the most important question we could ask tonight is, why is it that we really do have more than we need? I mean, are you willing to ask that question? Why is it that you have more than you need? Is it so that you won't worry? I mean, is that why God has given you more than you need? Does He know that sometimes you get really anxious and worried, and if you just have more than you really needed, that would make your life so much less stressful and you wouldn't be worried about the future or any of those things? Because that's the way we think, right? If I just had a little more, I wouldn't have to worry. I wouldn't be so stressed out. So maybe God doesn't want us to be stressed out. So He gives us more than we need. I don't know. Maybe God gives you more than you need so that you can increase your lifestyle. I mean, is that it? Whenever you get a bonus, whenever you get a raise, whenever you get $40 from a Craigslist sale? Is it so that you can go out and spend it on yourself? Is it so that you can bump up your lifestyle? Is it so that you can go get that bigger apartment you've been wanting, that bigger house you've been wanting, that new pair of skis that you want? Is that it? Is it every time we get more than we need, is it so that God wants us to increase our lifestyle? Maybe God gives you more than you need so that you can leave a whole lot of money to your children when you die. Like, is that it? Because we all know our problems in life are because our parents didn't leave us enough, right? I mean, that's really the cause of all of our problems. And we all know people who have been left a whole lot of money from their parents. And when they're left a whole lot of money, people that inherit a whole lot of money, does that usually like solve all their problems, or does that create a whole bunch of new problems? See, I'm not sure God gives us more than we need so that we can just save it all up and then pass it on to our children when we die. Maybe God gives us more than we need so that we can quit working early. Like maybe He's given us all kinds of talents and gifts so that we can find a job and we can invest in that job up to a certain age and then we can just check out and go do whatever we want and quit working whenever we want. Maybe He's giving you more than you need right now so that you can quit working early. You see, I don't think it's any of these things, and yet that's what we buy into, right? I mean, every time we have more than we need, we think it's for us. We think it's so we can spend it. We think it's so we won't have to worry about our future. We think it's so we can quit working early. But that's not why God gives us more than we need. You know why He gives us more than we need? Let me illustrate. So tomorrow, Townsend, my son, is going to go to school. And Mommy is going to pack his lunch. And he's going to take it to school. And when he gets there, he's going to sit next to his best friend, Olivia, at school. And her mommy packed her lunch. And so they're going to sit down at lunch. And Townsend's going to pull his out. And Mommy gave him a nice, shiny apple. So Townsend's going to eat his apple. And Olivia's going to open her lunch and see what her mom packed for her. And her mom packed her a nice, juicy, delicious orange. So they're going to eat their fruit together. And then Townsend's going to dig into his lunch kit. And Mommy took the time to make him a sandwich. Isn't that nice? And so Townsend's going to eat his sandwich, and they're going to talk and have a lot of fun. And Olivia's going to look into her lunch kit, and her mommy made her a sandwich too. And she's going to enjoy that, and they're going to have a lot of fun. And then Townsend's going to look into his lunch kit, and look at that. Mommy packed two homemade, delicious-looking chocolate chip cookies. And Olivia doesn't have anything. Now, if you're watching this transpire, what are you going to say to Olivia? You're going to look at her and be like, oh, bummer. Like, guess your mom forgot about you. Like, guess your mommy doesn't love you as much as Townsend's mommy. Like, guess you're just going to have to watch Townsend enjoy his chocolate chip cookies. Would you ever say that? No. If you're sitting there watching all this transpire, and you had a chance to say something to Townsend, what would you say to him? Like, what's the one thing, what's the one word that you would say? Share. That's right. You look at him and you say, you need to share. And he would say, wait, but these are my cookies. Well, no, not really. They're not really yours. They're your mommy's and daddy's, and they just gave them to you. But I want them. Like, I want both of my cookies. Well, but don't you understand, buddy? Like, you got more than you need. And she doesn't have any. Like, won't you just share one with her? And I think God looks down at us the same way. And he looks like at all our wealth, and he looks at all our stuff, and he looks at all the clothes in our closets and all the stuff in our garage and all the money and all the accounts we have and all that stuff. And he says, do they really know why I gave them all that stuff? Do they realize why they have so much more than they need? That it's not really for them. That the reason I gave them more than they need, it's because there's people around them who are in need. That the reason God gives us more than we need is not because he's focused on us and what we want. It's because there are people around us who are in need. And I got to admit, when I think about that, and I think about what James has to say to us, I think James would look at all of us and he'd come to our houses and he'd say, look, don't you dare let me look in your closet and see you with a bunch of clothes and shoes that you don't need and you don't even wear. Don't let me come to your house and see a bunch of stuff that you've got that you never even need. Don't let me look at your checking account and your checkbook and all your accounts and all your investments and all your insurance policies and see that the only person you've ever spent money on or saved money for or invested in or whose future you care about is you. Because a day is coming where you're going to have to stand before God and he's going to look at you and he's going to say, did you just focus on you all your life? Or is he going to be able to look at some of us and say, you know what? You came to a point, it took you a while to get there, but you came to a point where you learned that I gave you more than you ever needed, not for you, but because there were people around you in need. And you began investing in things around you that I'm doing in the lives of people around you. And you were a good steward and you were faithful with what I gave you. Well done, good and faithful servant. So what do we do with this? Is the takeaway that we all need to like go and sell everything we have and give it to the poor? That's not what I'm saying. Though it is interesting that the only conversation that's recorded in the Bible between Jesus and another rich person, that's exactly what Jesus told the rich person to do. But that's not what I'm saying. So do we need to go and sell everything? Do we need to make some radical decisions? I don't know. I hope some of us make some radical decisions. Am I saying we shouldn't save any money or ever think about the future? No, that's not what I'm saying, and I don't think that's what James is saying either. In fact, there are some of you that need to start saving. Like, you're not thinking about that at all, and you need to start doing that, or you're in debt, and you need to figure out how to get out of it. And there's people at this church that are really good at helping others get out of debt and learn how to save. And so if that's you, come talk to me afterwards, and I'll hook you up with one of those people who can help you out. But I think if there's one thing that all of us can take away from this passage, one thing, no matter what your financial situation is, it's this. We need to become givers and sharers. We need to share what we have and give some of what we have. And let me just tell you three quick ways of how to do that. And we've talked about this before, but let me just share it with you real quickly. We need to become percentage givers, which means you need to think about taking a percentage of whatever you make and just giving it away. And some people start at 10%. Some people have so much more than they need, they can give away a whole lot more than 10%. But you need to find a percentage and start giving it away. Second, you need to become a priority giver, which means once you identify a percentage, you make it a priority to give that. Like, you give it right off the top. It's not leftovers. Like, you don't give God your leftovers and say, well, I'll wait and see how much I have left over at the end of the month or at the end of the year. I'll see if I've got anything and then I'll give it away. No, you've got to guard yourself against everything that James is talking about. And the only way to do that is just to say, I'm going to give this much percentage every month or every year, and I'm going to make it a priority, and I'm going to take it off the top. And there's all kinds of practical ways to do that. There's online giving and all kinds of stuff that can help you do that. But you need to make it a priority. And then number three, become a progressive giver, which means every few months or every year, reevaluate what you're giving and bump it up a little bit. So if you gave 15% last year, give 16 or 17% this year. Because as God increases what he gives you, as God blesses you and me, as God gives us more, our natural tendency is always going to be to spend it on ourselves, to treat ourselves, to take ourselves out, to increase our lifestyle, to do the things that we want to do for ourselves. So every time God blesses you, what would it look like for you to say back to him, every time you give me more in my life, God, I'm going to recognize that the reason you give me more than I need is because there's other people around me who are in need. And you're doing something in their life, and you want me to be involved in that. If we'll do those three things, if we'll be percentage givers, priority givers, and progressive givers, I think it could change our lives. God has been so, so good to all of us. Let's take some of that goodness and be good to others who are around us. Let me pray. Father God, it's probably true that in the world's eyes, most of us in here would be considered rich. That's not a bad thing. But God, we don't want to just be rich in wealth. We want to be rich in faith. So I pray that you would help all of us to think through what you've given us and how you've blessed us. And then God, I pray that you would help us to figure out a percentage that we can give away, that we can share with others. And whether that's with the local church or whether that's other organizations that you're working through, whether it's other people that you've led us to support, God, I pray that you would help us to be generous people. Because ultimately, God, you've been generous to us. We thank you for your Son who died for us. We thank you for your Spirit who walks with us through life. And we thank you for being the Father who loves us and never withholds any good gift from us. Lord God, we pray all this in your name. Amen.